The most dangerous thing in the woods isn't bears or boars. It's people. Every year, hunters, fishermen, campers, and hikers run into deranged individuals and deadly criminal elements. The stories are shocking, yet few know what's really going on. Join me, wildlife journalist Chester Moore, as we raise awareness to these issues and shed light on the dark outdoors. Thank you for joining us. I'm very, very excited about this guest. I have William Ramsey of William Ramsey Investigates, and I came across him a few years ago when I first heard of the smiley face killer phenomenon. It's a very, very unusual situation where young men, typically in their 20s, are found dead in water after having disappeared sometimes 40 days plus earlier. It's a really weird crime situation, and it involves our domain, the great outdoors, because the bodies are found in water and sometimes in rural areas. So welcome to the program to talk about this fascinating and scary topic, William Ramsey.
Chester, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So it's very much appreciated that you're spending your time with us today. And, you know, we have to get kind of the elephant out of the room first, because the smiley face killer's title is so attached to all of this. For those who don't know, have never heard of this, what is the smiley face killer phenomenon in a nutshell?
So what it is this phenomenon of young men disappearing from bars or public places to be missing for 3 days, 7 days, sometimes 40 days, and then later being found in water. So it's a large mystery. It was really codified by two guys. One was a New York City police detective by the name of Gannon, and another one was a criminologist named Gilbertson. And they both independently came across this same phenomenon, met up, and they actually wrote a great book, which I recommend, which is called Case Studies in Forensic Drowning, which really details only 14 cases of a very much wider phenomenon of this happening actually on a global level. I've made two movies about it. Sure. One is The Smiley Face Killers, who is abducting, torturing, murdering young men in the U.S. and U.K., and the other one is The Smiley Face Killers, The Global Slaughter Continues. So I have two documentaries about it, and that's really kind of about a nutshell of the case, but it's very complex. It's multi-jurisdictional. There's a lot of other things going on with that. But yeah, that's it really in a nutshell.
Now, I know the reason, but our listeners may not. What is the significance in this of the smiley face?
Well, that's a great question. I think that what they found, the reason why this phenomenon got the name Smiley Face Killers is that Gilbertson and Gannon found this typically spray painted in red smiley face close to where they think some of these victims went in the water. So that's how it got its name. So this mystery kind of got this name. And in my research, which I include in my first documentary, it's used often in kind of like Hollywood or in the underground music scene, the smiley face. So there is an association with these kind of dark underworlds. And a good example would be Alan Moore's The Watchmen, where the comedian always has a smiley face. But it pops up in other environments, and it usually has kind of an esoteric meaning. Like there's a smiley face is a happy face, but I think the esoteric meaning is that, I think especially in Moore's film, is that reality or the universe is a big joke, and we're all kind of in a, you know, meaningless universe. And I think that that might be the attachment of who's perpetrating these crimes and what their kind of calling card is.
Well, that's, and it's just kind of chilling to think about that. And of course, you know, that's also something the media or people who scoff could say, oh, you know, there's smiley faces everywhere. And we'll circle back to that later on. But you can't deny that there are bodies showing up, sometimes missing for extremely long periods of time and found in situations where it doesn't look like the body's been in the water. And the one that kind of really got me interested in this from my perspective as an outdoorsman and a wildlife journalist was Todd Geib.
Yes.
He was up in, I think it was Casanova. Michigan. Yeah, Michigan.
Casanova, Michigan, yes.
Yeah, and he was at a keg party, and they found him in a lake called Ovetal Lake. And I looked at that lake, it was 13 acres, so it wasn't a really big lake.
Yeah, I think that that was one of the cases that Gannon and Gilbertson kind of went in detail about and followed it. But that's one of the reasons why the smiley face is because after he was found missing, he was found in a river. He was at a party, like an outdoors party, decided to walk home, went missing, was found upright in a pond. Half of his body was upright in a very unnatural position. And there was just, when people were researching it, there was a lot of suspicious activity. But what Gilbertson and Gannon found was that on his headstone, after he was buried, somebody came up and put a smiley face on the headstone, kind of like a tag. So it was never found out who did that. But that's one of the cases where the smiley face was associated to it. But Todd Guybe was a very mysterious case. He was a Christian, and mm-hmm. There is kind of a the victims have there's a preponderance of them being religious or Christians, which is somewhat telling. But that area in western Michigan, an outdoor area, has a number of cases of people being found in water, found dead under mysterious circumstances. There was an outdoorsman you might be interested. His name was Cullen Finnerty. He was an excellent, I think he was Division II quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, he was one of the best quarterbacks in Division II ever. But he was found after he thought that he was being trailed in the outdoors, and he was found face down. He was an athletic, very, tough guy mm-hmm. who had mm-hmm. was been through many, many football games. But that's a very suspicious case. So I would suggest to you and mm-hmm. maybe your listeners to look up the case of Cullen Finnerty, who died there in western Michigan as well in the outdoors.
Yeah, I'm on that. And that's, it's really interesting to think about these cases, the profile of the victims. I mean, you think of a victim of some kind of attack being a young girl or the elderly or something. These are men in the prime physical part of their lives.
Yeah, that's kind of what the distinction is that why are people going after these men, and mm-hmm. why is that a target? There's a lot of questions about that, but like, why aren't women found in the same thing? So mm-hmm. I think that was one of the mysteries about these crimes. I do think that there's like a homosexual aspect to some of them, but not all of them. But there is definitely kind of like this whole, it seems like there's a predator and some of these men are prey. And Gilbertson again have found tons of GHB associated with these cases, so I think mm-hmm. it's pretty clear that some of them are being drugged in the bars and then trailed. And one of the primary cases that Gannon found was a guy by the name of McNeil. He was a Fordham University student, and he disappeared out of a bar in Manhattan. He said their pupils said he was throwing up, walking on his hands and knees, or trying to get somewhere, and was later found in water down the Hudson. So So some of these people also, because they're found in water, I think that the authorities think that it's an accidental drowning, and so that's what these are written off as. But mm-hmm. there's many other indicators that would indicate that some form of foul play took place. So in McNeil's place and situation, he had wounds that were consistent with like a blowtorch on his body after people found an autopsy, or his parents did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people sometimes have all kinds of scrapes and scars or unusual circumstances around there. So I think that the researchers have really shown that there's definitely a pattern of these people disappearing and being found in water.
Yeah, but the thing that really struck me is like them being in water and they've been somewhere else. They've been, obviously, if this theory holds water on even one case, it's terrifying that these people were put in water. And I'm looking at one case from, I think it is Brian Weltzian, who was in, in Indiana. They found his body 77 days later in Lake Michigan.
Right.
And, where were these people? If they were, what's going on with them is, I guess, the big question. And is water, do you think that water is basically a solvent to erase the crime scene?
I think that's part of it. I think that it's mm-hmm. also kind of a perfect crime. Like, if you can lead the authorities and people to believe that somebody accidentally drowned when something else happened, then mm-hmm. you're getting away with a crime. So I think that that's the purpose. I've kind of come to the conclusion that because of these cases that barely really took off during the internet or the ascent of the internet, it seems like somebody has shared this MO mm-hmm. in so many cases. So the case that really got my interest was Joey LaBute out of Columbus, Ohio. Was mm-hmm. at a bar, and he was missing for 19 days. I literally watched him, the story of his disappearance, and then him being found in a place previously searched. So many of these cases, if you follow them in detail, kind of like I have, there's massive searches that take place for these missing men. And then suspiciously, they'll just show up in a place that's already searched. So the first one that really piqued my interest was Joey LaBute out of Columbus, Ohio. And then there was a Pittsburgh case, Dakota James, who's missing for 40 days. And literally showed up in, I think it's the Ohio River, But he was not, well, what's really terrifying is that he did not have any indicators that he was in the water for 40 days, more like 24 hours. His skin was still white. So it was, I mean, where is he? He had a noose, like a rope around his neck or rope marks. And that involved a very prominent forensic pathologist by the name of Cyril Wecht, who's gets involved in a lot of criminal cases. And he said, yeah, this guy was literally had a garrote around his neck. So there seems to be a lot of disinterest by the federal authorities. The FBI put out a statement in 2010 stating that, you know, they could find no evidence of these being a pattern. But I think if you watch my movies, the pattern is pretty obvious. I think I have 123 cases of men all around in multiple jurisdictions who disappeared and were found in water. So, I think that these cases show this same kind of pattern and similarity taking place, and actually kind of died off during COVID, but there's been a couple recent suspicious cases as far as I know. So, you got to really watch out. And there's really a problem with people trying to ascertain motive. Like, what's the motive for these crimes? And so if people can't find the motive, then they just don't think it's typically the analysis is that it's not a crime. But I think that there's some strange characters who do not need a standard motive for committing these crimes. So,
Well, I watched both your documentaries and they were exhaustively researched, which I appreciate. You know, I didn't have to, you know, I could look at this and, you know, and draw conclusions. And as someone who investigates a lot of wildlife crimes and poaching units, and even some things are tied with wildlife trafficking and human trafficking, you look at these things, there's no way to ignore the pattern being exactly the same. And also, there seem to be clusters of these. Can you talk about some of the clusters of these incidents?
Yeah, I mean, one is definitely Boston, New York City, and definitely the kind of the north-central part of the country, whether a college town, so Minneapolis, Minnesota, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. But the Boston cases came to somebody else's attention. So there's kind of independent researchers. Also, Manchester, UK, there's been a number of cases. So you have these kind of independent researchers who don't see the kind of broader picture, in my opinion, but they kind of come at it independently. So the cases that were in Boston were really fascinating because there's so many. And also Pittsburgh, PA. But, there's definitely – and New York is very active. And so those are places to be careful of. But also, you know, some of these cases are in strange places, people traveling. There was a case out of California called Ian Powers, who disappeared out of a 49ers game and was found in water. But there's cases outside of, in Scotland, there's a number of cases. So Bath in England. So there's definitely something peculiar happening inside, you know, around the world, really.
Well, you know, I think about the opportunity for, you know, these people going to some of these maybe under bridges or in some of these areas not that well used in a city if they were going to dump a body in or whatever. But one of the groups of people that do use these waterways, even in larger cities, are fishermen. There are people who night fish. There's whole groups of people now that's like urban fishing thing, as well as in these other areas. And I'm thinking about being there when you're, you know, fishing along the edge of the brush in some secure area you think secure, and then all of a sudden, you know, someone comes up to dump a body. I mean, that's one of the reasons we'll do this podcast, to raise awareness of the fact, to maybe keep your, you know, keep your eyes focused on what's going on. Don't necessarily ignore everything you see out there. You may pick up on something that could solve one of these crimes.
Yeah, no doubt. And I do think it's, I think that there's multiple groups or individuals doing it. But I think that you, when you state that, it brings to mind the case of Dakota James, who was found downriver, but somebody said that they saw something suspicious by the side of the river on, I think it was a Monday morning. So somebody was trying to do, in my opinion, trying to do something on a Sunday night when they thought it wasn't going to be very busy. And, you know, maybe they would have saw something and reported it. But like I said, I think that these guys are somewhat sophisticated in what they do. And people don't expect to see a crime scene by a river. They don't really, you know, associate that with criminality. So maybe they're not really attuned to really making a statement or taking a look at what's going on.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about is that, unfortunately, it's very common for people to take some of their trash and different things and dump them along the edges of rivers and things like that. Someone could see someone dumping something in a distance, assume it's just some guy getting rid of some trash or something he couldn't put in a garbage can, you know? And you know, so people to be a little more attuned to what's going on out there and be aware that these things do happen. And like, you know, with Todd Guybe, he's a young guy out at a keg party out in the country. They find him in a, I looked at the lake's only 13 acres. I fished a little lake by my house. It's 7 acres at a friend of mine's property. You know, just not even double that. And they searched this area multiple times and they found his body upright in the water. A lot of strange things about these searches and combing over areas. It seems like many of these cases have very thorough searches.
Absolutely. I think that a lot of when these people disappear, you can look at all the cases, people are getting out flyers, posters, the families get involved, mm-hmm. the police are involved. There's river searches. And some mm-hmm. of the bodies have already been searched, the river search, in very detailed, skilled ways where they're underwater, you know, putting wires down and searching every single yard, and there's nothing there. And then 2 weeks later, a body shows up. So, in my opinion, some of these people are clearly being held, and for what purpose is another question. But yeah, it's very disturbing when you really kind of look at all these cases and how many water cases. There's something going on.
Yeah, well, one of the things that really disturbed me deeply watching your documentaries, and I have seen the Oxygen series, and I've read on this and things as well. Like I said, it's hard to sort of believe that there's like one group of serial killers going around the world perpetrating these. But you mentioned like this is an MO. This is you're kind of theorizing, if I'm saying this correctly, this is an MO. Maybe this is some kind of a fetish or some kind of an underground crime that's being traded and is being done by multiple people, multiple groups in different places around the country and the world.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think that some of there's the subcultures like FetLife, things like that, where people are communicating. So I do think that there's something associated with the advent of the internet that involves these cases. So there might be people flying into the country. Like if you look at the case of Joey Labute, it took his death took place at the Arnold Schwarzenegger bodylifting event, which is one of Columbus's, if not Columbus's, biggest event of the year. And I don't think it's random that somebody might have flown in and done something and flown out of town. So you see this ability to travel, commit crimes, maybe leave that jurisdiction. But yeah, I do think that this information is being traded, or this MO has been discussed in an underground environment that involves, could be anything, the occult. Like I involved the occult in my first documentary, mm-hmm. and I've done an interview with Igor Sarsky, which talks about this group called the ONA that like literally does horrible, involves a lot of water with their group, but also there you kind of have to blood your way into that group, killing somebody, you know? And their ideal sacrifice is a 21-year-old man.
Wow. And that fits right here in the middle of what we're talking about. And you're thinking about this dark, evil, twisted ideology that could be traded out there with the advent of the internet, allowing sort of those dark seeds and roots to spread out. And you mentioned like people maybe coming into an event like the Arnold Classic. Well, I mean, that's kind of been proven with the Super Bowl, with the amount of human trafficking that goes on around Super Bowl events.
Right. No, very true. So a lot of these guys, some people disappear out of, you know, music venues, busy areas. In Boston, for example, there's a couple cases that involve people leaving TD Center and just disappearing. So being found in water later. So there's definitely an association with even busy places. And I think that, you know, some of these guys have some of these predators have found out that bars or venues where people have been drinking are a good hunting ground, a predatory hunting ground. So that's why there's an association with a lot of bars and things like that. But
well, if you know, if they're using the GHB, and you know, which is kind of like, if I got this right, kind of like been used as a date rape drug, even though it's in our system naturally, they're easy to get their inhibitions down. Then we've already had a few drinks. They're not thinking something, scared of thinking, having a good time. And then, you know, these people. But I'm wondering, is there anyone in any of these cases that had maybe the family kind of figured out maybe someone was grooming them, or someone had contacted them in advance, or any mysterious behavior before any of the disappearances?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it goes back to even the case that I was talking about earlier, which is Dakota James. It seems like somebody did a trial run on him because like 5 weeks before he disappeared, he called a friend and said, I don't know where I am. And so that person said he was disoriented. He had been somewhere, but he had, had somehow blacked out. And then they got him. He said he was really scared. And then like that same thing happens to him. He disappears for 40 days. So it's almost like somebody knew and targeted him for whatever reason. So some of these other people may have been tested or somebody knew something about them. And it's really hard to tell. I think that some of it's really scary is that it's a random crime, which is even worse. But, you know, that's the one case that comes to mind where I think that he was targeted for this type of crime was Dakota James in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Wow. Well, I'm investigating some very unusual horse killings in Texas. Patterned. There's some that are meat harvest. There's some that are targeting horses owned by little girls that are on social media with them, and they're killing them and leaving them lay. And on the meat harvest killings, the thing that I noted immediately, because I work with mountain hunters and all kind of stuff, is you're not going to harvest the meat off a 1,000-pound animal by yourself in someone's back pasture. There's got to be at least a couple of people. It seems to me that with some of these cases, these young men, and like they're not found, you know, with their heads bashed in, that it might take more than one person to pull some of this off.
Yes, I do think that that's possible. And I think that even in my documentary, I think it was parent of one of the kids said that there was a team of people traveling from city to city hunting, you know. And so I do believe that there might be something far stranger involved and much weirder than the standard kind of criminologist really understands. And I think that that's why these cases have gone on so much. And I think that kind of the outlook of, you can go into the FBI's Lanning Report where there's no such cult motivations for crime or things like that. And I think that that might actually be kind of a blinder on some of the authorities. So,
I've heard different people like Russ Dizdar and others talk about how, because he used to be a police chaplain, that basically police are taught to not put a religion thing tied to because they think it'll cloud the evidence. And I've even seen where, you know, certain cases had after came out and things were in the public, there were occult involvements or, you know, attachments or something like that. In terms of the police look at this, do you think that so many of these are being blamed on drowning because that's just what it looks like and it's the easiest thing to find?
Absolutely. I think that that's the easiest thing. The police are incentivized to get things off books. If you're looking at it the first, it's just an accidental drowning. And I think that that's intentional. I think that that's the goal of the perpetrator. If you're thinking about trying to commit a crime, get away with it. That's what you want the police to think. The problem is that some of these people have injuries that aren't consistent with drowning. They're missing for a period of time. Typically, if you want to get graphic, these bodies would be found or surfaced within 3 or 4 days. So why are they missing 19 days, 40 days, 3 weeks? So there's really all tons of problems with the view of these as just being simple accidental. What's driving these people towards the water? Well, Zine, the case you mentioned, for him, they say he came out of a bar. He wasn't feeling well. For him to get to the lake, he had to cross like 4 lanes of a freeway of traffic if he was walking. So it's highly improbable that he actually made it there if he was sick or drugged. The other thing is most of these cases, if not all of these cases, I can't even think of one case where an observer saw this person enter the water. So of all the cases I've looked at, 200, 300, you would think, he was drinking. I saw him walk over to the side of the lake at 1:30, or I was driving in my car. Like, why doesn't some random person see these guys go swimming, right?
That's or a security camera these days with so many cameras up in these city areas.
Very well said. So cameras as well. And that's the same. It's the oddities of some of these cases in Manchester, in Bath, where there's, you know, London or England has tons of CCTV cameras. Why aren't they finding these people? So there's a lot of problems. When you really start analyzing and asking questions about these cases, there's a lot of problems. And I think that that's the easiest excuse is to say that these are accidental drownings. But clearly some of these in very obvious cases are not drownings. They're not.
What about their phone? What about phone recovery?
Yeah, see, that's another good question. So sometimes their phones are found right by the waterside. Sometimes their phones are found. Their phones are smashed. So there's a lot of suspicious things. In some of these cases, I think the cops, at least in one case that happened in Michigan, And this guy might have been a multiple perpetrator. His name was Katunsky, but they actually found this kid. His name was Kevin Bacon, just like the actor. But yeah, it's a very interesting case. But they the cops were smart, really good in this case, because they found the guys like he was on Grindr, and they found out who he contacted with. So they actually did some really good police work, and they actually caught this guy, and he was literally in a dungeon. And so he's found in a dungeon. The guy, I mean, it gets pretty graphic. But Katunsky might have been traveling all around the country. You know, might have been a serial killer. So I don't know. He's actually being in trial right now. I think it just happened last year. But yeah, so Katunsky was one they actually caught. And it kind of actually fit into my conclusions from my first documentary, because I surmised or deduced that these people are being kept in some kind of dungeon environment, and that's what Katunsky had. He literally had a dungeon in his basement that was a hidden dungeon, and the cops were very sharp and found it. So credit to the cops in that case.
And then you think about popular culture, you think about a movie like Silence of the Lambs, where the Buffalo Bill character had essentially a dungeon, a pit, and then so many of these things out there in pop culture, and maybe someone wanting to mimic what they're seeing or fantasizing about something, obsessing over it, and then taking it to that dark level.
Right, I think so. And I think, I mean, Katunsky is a perfect example, because he was all over the internet. He had a very active social media. He had kind of an anti-Christian animus. He was literally like a homosexual prostitute on this one Rent Me or some kind of thing. So he was very skilled. He was an educated guy, but he was all over the internet. So some of these people might have heard something on one of these websites. When I did my first documentary, I referenced this movie called Kink, where it's literally almost like one of these terrifying like movies where you can, the way that pornography site works is they would have these dungeons and people would pay to get in to watch what was going on.
Jeez.
Right? But this was legal. This is legal, like it's 18 and older. But imagine if some, like, well, maybe there's a, and they had, they, the revenues of this place that did this stuff were off the charts. It was in the millions. But imagine just one or two of those thousands of people who are watching it wanted something a little bit more extreme, right? And then you're off into different things. And there's stories about the internet now that just are chilling. Things are happening out of the Philippines. There was a guy there who was a pedophile who was filming stuff for people. So maybe these cases have something to do with that.
The movie Hostel.
Yes.
Where, you know, there were people paying to go, you know, do these, you know, killings and these atrocious things, you know, and, you know, that's the thing about this. You know, I'm a follower of Christ, and I have a ministry that works with children, and we work with kids in therapeutic settings with animals. We use animals for therapy sessions. And some of the things that these kids have happened to them is so dark and so atrocious. But there, behind that is a person that perpetrated that. Do you think, like I do, that the internet has been probably the number one factor in this?
Well, I would say that there's a very important component, I think, to these crimes of the internet. Exchanging ideas, people communicating, people learning about this, trying to find a kind of perfect crime. I do believe that's a component of this. Mm-hmm. And whether the totality of, you know, what happens if they ever find these perpetrators, we'll find out more. But I do think that there's a tie-in in the rise of these cases. I think McNeil was like, the original case is like 1995. It's like right around the advent of really when the internet started taking off. So, you know, we're kind of in a new era of 25 years since that. And I think that there's something involved in that. There's so many of these guys are involved in Grindr or some of these gay dating apps. And I actually talked about a killer in London. His name was Stephen Port. And he was like a 45-year-old guy, but he was like serial killing these people. His case is still going on. They're still doing an inquest trying to figure out how he got away with it for so long. But he did something. He tried to cover up his murders. So he made it look like they were drug overdoses. They were heroin overdoses. So he left them in like this church area that was known for users to do drugs, and so he was definitely trying to cover up. So these people who are committing these crimes are probably doing the same thing. They're trying to cover it up and leaving them in water to cover it up, and it worked. It's worked for decades. If that's what's happening, which I believe is happening, it's worked.
But one of the things you probe in your documentaries is that that there may be evidence that some of these have died in water, but not maybe drowned. I mean, that there are, you know, there's even a frozen body, I believe.
Right. There was a frozen body out of, I think it was Eau Claire. But yeah, they found, I'm trying to remember his name. But yeah, that was one of the Gannon Gilbertson cases. But yeah, I mean, I showed this thing from this guy who was an occultist. His name was Peter Christofferson. He was in the occult underground, and he made this video called Broken that looked like a real S&M kind of video in a dungeon. And he simulated the occult kind of drowning of a guy who wasn't in water. And so, you know, some of these guys have strange ideas. And that was associated with Trent Reznor. That was so these guys, and then he has kind of strange connections to certain things. So there is an underground that I think that's why the police don't really understand this type of crime, because it's out of there. It's a subculture, I think, that they may not know about. There was a movie with Al Pacino called Cruising, and it was done by the guy, the same director who did The Exorcist, but it was going into an underground of a serial killer in a gay community, and it was like, it's a whole different subculture. You know, there's a lot of really crazy stuff going on. So I think that that's, some of these cases would be like that, but not all. I don't think it's just one person or one group. I think it's a series of groups. And some people have speculated, well, the chief researcher for my film was Jim Smith. His, I think, social media handle is Smiley Face Cult. So I think you've kind of figured out that there were cells. There were different groups doing this, because there were two guys who died on the same weekend in different cities in the same MO, which kind of leads you to believe that people are in communication or contact using code words or things like that. And he had a case in his area. He's, you know, but this guy's wearing a necklace with a smiley face on.
Well, I can't help but think, like, how much television, technology, internet may help a criminal get away with things, because now you can just find out how they investigate everything and find the loophole.
Right. Perfect. It's very true. One of the odd things about Peter Christofferson that I found out is he liked to spend his time reading forensic manuals. So he's reading, like, criminal forensics. This is a very smart guy. His dad was a professor. And you have a guy with a really high IQ who wants to, you know, whose worldview is, you know, I'm above the law. I want to outwit these cops. Maybe he has that incredible satisfaction of, like, a bad guy of, like, hey, I pulled off the perfect crime, and I'm laughing at you. I pulled it off, right? I'm saying he was a member of the Illuminates of Thanateros, like a post-Crowley magical group that believes in chaos magic. They literally want to, like, poison the psychosphere. It's a different way of thinking. The average Christian has very hard time. Myself, I speak for myself, can't understand how these guys think. It's not just the murder. It's the aesthetics. It's the effect. They're trying to destabilize the system, and it's hard for people to really just understand their motive. And so if these guys think differently, that's motive enough. And I think that's really a fault of the kind of, I would, in a very general sense, law enforcement not attributing criminality to the occult. But the occult and a lot of these doctrines, some of these are really nasty. They don't believe, they believe they're above the law. They're like little titans, gods.
Well, you know, if you think about the politically correct, you know, world that we're trying to live in now, according to all the powers that be, you know, like, you can't even say anything about a practice or a belief. You can't even say that an Islamic group is a Islamic extremist group, you know, without getting backfire, much less some of these more esoteric groups that most people have never heard of. They say, oh, that's just, they're practicing their religious freedom, right. You know?
No, it's one way, that's the way they're looking at it. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. You can't insult Christianity in any of its forms, though.
Absolutely.
So that's really the target, but...
Yeah, it's really strange. I remember my introduction to that the occult was real came as a 17-year-old boy going parking with my girlfriend, you know, to make out. And we pull up to this spot on the edge of the city, and I'm pulling up in my truck, and there is a circle of candles big as my den, and a guy in a black cloak running away.
Wow.
And I got chills right now. I didn't know it was possible to back out of a spot that fast. It was like the Millennium Falcon in Star Wars with, like, you know, the light beams. It was boom, and I got out of there, and I went, oh my God, that was real. I mean, I knew what that circle of candles was. I wasn't immersed in knowing what the occult is, but everybody knew a guy in a black cloak and a circle of candles in the middle of the woods ain't good, you know? And that always made me think, like, you know, this stuff is real at some level. That can happen in little Orange, Texas, where I live. And then you saw these reports later on. So that, as an outdoors person, I mean, I've ran into, you know, I got chased off a mountain in Northern California in Humboldt County, probably by drug pushers, at night, almost got random pushed off the mountain years ago. And I found a meth. I mean, I didn't go look for the meth in the lab, but I knew what it was. And I started thinking, these are dangers. And, you know, what if you're out in the woods and you come across a ritual, or now you're on the water and you come across a body dump? And one of the things I tell people is this: look, I go into the outdoors to enjoy it. It's time in God's creation for me. I like to fish, I like to hunt, like to do wildlife photography. But we can't ignore that there are predatory people. And I want every listener, every reader of my stuff to know. That's why I'm doing this. Believe me, I'm not getting paid a lot to do these kind of stories. I mean, I'm not paying anything. I'm just doing this because I want people to be aware that there are dangers. And maybe you're not going to be a target of the quote smiley face killers, but maybe your son is, you know, maybe your nephew is. And if you listen to this and you can put the pieces together, maybe someone gets their life saved.
Agreed. I mean, I think that that's one of the reasons why I think these crimes keep going on, because men don't typically in those environments think of themselves as a target, where women do. Women are always watching their drink. They're watched out. So I think that their defenses are down for the men. And, but yeah, once you kind of understand, I do think it's important for everybody knows that this is happening. Like, I'm beyond convinced. The evidence for me is overwhelming that there's a pattern, probably 200 to 300 men in total worldwide. This has happened to where they've been abducted, drugged. So, yeah, it's very important to tell your friends and family, especially younger, but like I mean, here's an example. This is from the ONA literature, if I can read it to you. It says, the planning of the sacrifice could take months. If done properly, the sacrifice will be perceived as an accident or motiveless crime. That's literally from the documents. Yeah.
You know, and Christians get assaulted because Jesus said, I bring not peace but a sword, you know? And these guys are talking about ritually killing someone and making him disappear without a trace. It's just...
make it look like an accident, but here's an additional thing. It says, the conduct of the sacrifice could involve the entire local group. So that could be what binds them together. So 7 people go out. There was a case here in California of a guy by the name of Van Zant who disappeared out of Hermosa Beach. And mm-hmm. The people who last saw him said he was with a group of people. That was where he last was seen. He was with some group of people he didn't know. So these ideas are out there. They're not shared publicly, but they're in these groups, the IoT and all these, luminous.
This particular one struck me because of the organizational element, the planning, the fact that no one's been, you know, that we know of has been, has been convicted of this.
That specific crime, right?
Yep, of that crime, and that it's so targeted on a certain demographic. I mean, you have to be able to look at this rationally and go, there's something organized here, and this is a new level of crime that we're aware of and people need to know. So if you're fishing, if you're out on these waterways, these bodies are showing up in water, be alert. Be more alert than you think you might need to be, especially in some of these areas we mentioned about in terms of where there are clusters. And also, if you see something, maybe you don't see them dump a body, but you see an unusual van pull up or something being thrown out on the shoreline, maybe make note of that and contact officials. Maybe you could be the one to help link something to put some of these people behind bars.
I mean, they just had this one guy, Little, who was arrested. He was traveling from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. They think he might have had 100 killings. I mean, he was heterosexual, but these guys may be doing something like that, moving from state to state, being incognito, really thinking about it. But yeah, the planning that's involved. Some people have speculated it's military precision because, you know, operational type people who understand kind of operational security and to take steps. So there's definitely some thought involved in these crimes, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a mainstreaming of the occult that's so much in your documentaries as well. And so what kind of symbolism should someone be cautious of? I mean, is there Is there something that if you see this painted somewhere or whatever that we should really have a red flag?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the smiley face for sure. But some of these, like there was one Tommy Booth outside of Philadelphia. There was a huge sigil that was put up against the wall that included a smiley face. But it's kind of like magical writing. And he was missing for 9 days. He was found in a previously searched area behind a bar where the guy, the band member who was playing the night before he disappeared or the night he disappears was wearing a smiley face t-shirt. So you gotta kind of be really suspicious. His mom said he was tangled with people with dark intent. So you just kind of you don't want to be in places where angels fear to tread at certain times, and you don't want to be off by yourself. It's just kind of like the Serengeti. A lot of these guys wander off by themselves, and so they probably just don't think that they'll ever get disappeared. There was a case in England where the guy was like lying by the side of the road, but got found in a pond. You know, days later, but it's just there's people with evil intent out there, and you got to really be careful.
Well, one of my blogs at Higher Calling the Net, I've developed sort of a system, not for smiley face killer thing necessarily, but also this be part of it, of just when you go into, it doesn't have to be the deep woods, it can be, you know, a creek in the edge of a city no one ever goes to, but a remote type area. You know, I always say if you can and it's legal and you know how to use it, carry a gun. Have a plan. Let people know that you're going to be at this certain location and let them know a basic time you'll be home. If you park, I say park strategically. So park where you don't have to, you know, back up or whatever. You have your vehicle pointed the door. I learned this from watching horror movies as a kid because the killer always got him backing up in the mud, right? So I'm thinking, they never had a gun. Park strategically. Carry a transponder if you can. I have one called Spot X, and it's a very low fee every month. And you can literally, if something happens, hit SOS and alert your GPS coordinate every track and a research group or whatever in that region. And to study your area. I have areas here where I live in East Texas I will not go. I no longer go in 85% of the zones I would alone before because of the proliferance of methamphetamine labs that are showing up. And I found one. I ran into one myself. Thank God. I don't think anyone was in it. I didn't get close enough to look. But, you know, what if someone had been there? You know, I could have got shot or something. And so research your areas and look, if there's a high rate of crime happening in these certain areas, just don't go, you know, stay away. And you're mentioning this as well, you know, young men in this age class, these areas, you know, you probably shouldn't be out drinking anyway, but certainly don't go somewhere alone like this and, you know, and just be really careful.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of these people, they don't have that sense of fear, and that's really what kind of leads them into those situations. It's like, you know, somebody could be stalking you, so you don't know. I talked about, there was this guy, Lanfear, who I covered in my first documentary, who was married, had a wife, but still was abducting kids, locking them up, but his predatory grounds was bars at 12 a.m. So he had somehow keyed in to that time as being a time where he could commit his crimes, because he knew men would be drunk, you know, not paying attention, it's cold outside, maybe they need to get in a car, who knows. So, same thing probably in the backcountry too. You want to really just be careful. It could be the same thing. They're looking for a lone guy. There's tons of stories about inappropriate things happening in the Appalachian Trail, Yosemite, all kinds of that. People looking for people alone. So, you got to really be careful.
Yeah, I just interviewed someone whose friend was killed. He was a disabled vet. He had just gotten kind of healed up enough to hike, and he disappeared and was found dead on the Appalachian Trail. And you know, it's such a sad situation. And to me, the outdoors is just a great place to be and so stress-free. And I just want to make people aware, you know, I'm sure you've gotten blowback on stuff you've done. And just in the little bit I've done on, like, you know, finding a meth lab or running into some nut job somewhere, I've had people say, oh, you shouldn't talk about that. The outdoors is fun. I'm like, no, I want to make sure that people go into these areas with the arm, with the information, so they come out alive, you know?
Some of those meth guys, really, they make decisions that a normal person would not make. I mean, you can
absolutely.
Bobo Story was her name, I think, was a girl. Guy was like a meth head and abducted her. So, you know, happens.
It's scary stuff.
Got to really be careful.
I have at least five areas that I no longer will go into because of that situation there. You know, and I recommend people, hey, don't go there. It's just not safe, not worth it. And it's part of just being aware. It's a shame, but hey, better to be aware than, you know, it's not, I want to come back to my wife and daughter. I don't want to, you know, have to deal with that kind of stuff. And I also don't want to be, you know, redneck enough to go like, well, I'm going to shoot them. Well, I'll use my concealed, you know, weapon or whatever if I have to defend my life. But I want to be in a situation where I don't have to do that. I want to have proactive, you know, situation. And one of the ways these young men can be proactive is just to think a little bit, maybe not go out drinking by yourself. Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of you want to come home with the team, you know, like you're a squad or a platoon or whatever. And NOM, for men and women, don't leave somebody behind, man. Make sure everybody gets home and don't peel off. Don't allow people to peel off. Or you're going home, I'm going home too. You know, that kind of thing. Almost all these cases are guys alone. They're seen alone. They're walking alone. They somehow got separated from the bar. So somehow that happens. You don't want to let that happen.
Now, just one kind of final question. We'll get to ways people can connect with you. The smiley face itself. There's no way to ignore this. It's what people will gravitate to. It seems to be a calling card at some level because there's been a series, there's been books, there's been documentaries. Has the smiley face increased, disappeared, or is any MO changing you can see because of the publicity?
I don't know. I mean, because of COVID, it's dropped off. There was a fairly recent case. The guy's name was Holden in Sacramento. He disappeared, found in water. But maybe the police have seen something. Some people have done the research. But I haven't seen really anything associated with the more recent cases that they're using this. So maybe things are changing. But Gannon and Gilbertson said they have 12 different symbols and things like that and statements associated with these crimes, much more than the smiley face. So they really they were the ones who put the tag of this phenomenon on it. But I'm still seeing smiley faces pop up in common culture. There was actually a movie called Smiley Face Killers that just came out. So it's still being used in the common culture as an exemplar. But yeah, I don't know any of the more, probably the cases within the last couple of years, I haven't seen this kind of thing associated with it, that symbol.
Well, you know, I went and spoke at an elementary school about wild turkeys the other day, and I just booked this interview with you, and I go there, and there's a kid with a smiley face backpack, and there's a smiley face on the bulletin board, and I know, obviously, they're not there using it for some esoteric reason. I think it's kind of a cute symbol. But it's something our culture is used to seeing, but this has obviously been turned into a very dark thing with different meanings for different groups of people. Yeah. And people want to dig deeper into this. I highly recommend your documentaries and everything. How can people connect with you?
Yeah, I'm on Gab now. I pretty much threw away my Twitter and Facebook permanently. I'm very happy about that. So I've gotten rid of Big Tyrant Tech. So I'm on Gab, MeWe, Minds, and Parler at this point. I mean, I probably could change, but I'm pretty happy with Gab, and my website's WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com. I have a Proton Mail account, WilliamRamseyInvestigates@ProtonMail.com, if people want to send me any emails. But my videos, or my two documentaries, are available on Vimeo, and those are long. I mean, the first documentary was 3.5 hours, so there's tons of information in that, and like over 70 cases, so... And also, my second one, I talk about kind of the so-called debunkers of the phenomenon and how their problems with their analysis with these deaths. And so, you know, I recommend people, if people want to get a start and kind of get kind of into this phenomenon, I also recommend Jim Smith and my two interviews with Igor Sarsky, which are on my podcast on Spreaker, William Ramsey Investigates. I got kicked off of YouTube, so the best place to listen to my materials on Spreaker. But also Jim Smith of Smiley Face Cult is probably, for me, the most important researcher. He's really got a handle on all the cases and really watches. Yeah, we kind of synced up over the death of Joey LaBute. I kind of discovered him. So I would recommend checking his stuff out. I think he's still on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people researching these cases. There's a lot of people who aren't public, but hopefully we'll, you know, people will be more alert and more aware. We're kind of in a time of social decay, and I wouldn't be naive about that some of these people really have pretty evil intent and view other people not in good ways. So you got to really be careful these days. And in all contexts, especially with the smiley face killers, you don't want to end up as a victim or have your kids or your family. These families are wrecked, destroyed. They've lost a loved one in the prime of their life, and it didn't have to happen. So you got to really be careful.
Thank you very much. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, Mr. Ramsey. This was great.
Thank you, Chester. Thanks for having me.
If you would like to share your dark outdoor story, email Chester at chestermoore.com. If you would like a PDF file of my personal survival tips, put survival in the subject line. Read my wildlife writings and follow my Higher Calling Wildlife and Higher Calling Gulf Coast podcast at highercalling.net. Remember, never enter the wild without prayer and preparation.